Good morning, everybody. Good to be back. Last meeting of the before we take our summer break. This is a meeting of the the 2025 committee, and you have before you an agenda and minutes. Could I? I have a motion to approve both of those, please.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Acosta. Any conversation? Any concern? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes. So we're here today. The purpose of our meeting is to bring you all up to date on work that COG has been doing that overlaps with our momentum, or, you know, intersects perhaps is a better transportation word. And we've got a couple of folks here from COG who are going to walk us through two aspects of that work. But before I go much further, I want to turn it over to Sean Canaan to introduce it more fully. So, Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Might go to the next slide, please. Before we launch in and hear from our guests, I thought we would just set the stage a little bit for COG, TPB, Metro, and the relationship that we all have together in supporting this region as we continue to grow and prosper. As you can see behind me, very simply, we have, as do most regions in the nation, a metropolitan planning organization, which in this region is the TPB. And that group is charged with putting forward long-range transportation plans that project that we will be in conformity with air quality standards, with not CO2 levels and particulates. And that group right now sits within, or is affiliated with, Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. And the TPB is staffed by COG. And Ron Kirby is the director of the TPB. And we have the lead planner from COG here as well. The importance of this to Metro is that the group, the TPB, does author what we call the Constrained Long Range Plan. And what that essentially is that is a plan of transportation projects that, as the wording suggests, the wording is specific, are reasonably expected to be funded. And by reasonably expected to be funded, we know that means they're reasonably expected to be funded by local jurisdictions that are sponsoring those projects and are planning for them and are putting them up for consideration to be part of the region's long-range plan. The significance of being in the long-range plan is aside from for almost all projects, a necessary precursor to receiving traditional sources of federal funding. And so I do want to highlight the fact that we at Metro have been working with TPB and COG for a long time to make sure that regional transportation goals are articulated and advocated. Right now, from a total transportation side, I think there's $230 billion some odd dollars in the total CLRP, of which roughly $7 or $8 billion are transit related, and we can correct that if that's wrong, but I believe that's the number. And to date, right now at least, there are none of the Metro 2025 or Metro-specific projects in that CLRP. So the significance of this document, the significance of the relationship, and the role that TPB and COG play in the region are intrinsically connected to not only Metro's long-range plans, but also our plans for rebuilding our system, as well as making sure that it's built for the next 10 years, and specifically to this committee, the execution implementation of Metro 2025 and the priorities and momentum. With that as an overview, I think I'm going to turn it over to first Paul, who will have some time to present to you on Region Forward and the activity centers, and then followed by Paul, who will walk through the Regional Transportation Priorities Plan and its importance. So with that, we can go to the next slide.
There we go. Good morning. My name is Paul Desjardins. As Sean said, I'm the Director of Community Planning and Services at COG. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to come before you today, chat with what was a very, very important product for us, and very pleased also to speak with you, Madam Chair, who has led us in much of this work as your role as the Chairman of the Region Forward Coalition as well. Next slide, please. I'm sure by now you're very familiar with Region Forward. It is COG's vision for the region. It is our strategic plan, if you will. It guides everything that we do at COG, and one of the key things about it is it does call out very specific goals, targets, metrics, and indicators for measuring progress, not the least of which are focusing growth in our region's activity centers, the major focus of development in the region. Economy Forward, the second report that you see there, was a product of the COG board last year that really took ownership of the fact that this region is changing. And what could we be doing as a region with our strategic partners and COG specifically to take ownership and then to plan strategically for our future. Next slide. Specifically, activity centers in context, Economy Forward really called out the fact that they are a strategic advantage, an economic advantage, a competitiveness opportunity for the metropolitan area. People come to study what we are doing in this region, particularly in the areas of transit-oriented development. And specifically, Economy Forward also called out the goals, again, that I alluded to in Region 4, that we should focus more growth in the future in our region's activity centers. We have very specific targets and metrics for that. Next slide, please. At this time last year, we had begun a process to update the activity centers map. This is the second major update that we embarked on, working very closely with our region's planning directors. The COG board, as you see here on the map, approved the updated activity centers map in January of this year. There are 141 total centers. What you're looking at is what we're really sort of saying, the policy framework, the locations of the different centers around the region. Next slide, please. Within those 141, we actually studied 95 of them as part of the strategic development plan, so about two-thirds of the centers around the region that we have a wealth of information and data for. Next slide, please. Back up very quickly, how did we come to identify the activity centers? Some of you may be a bit more familiar with this. First and foremost, as you see, they are places that are identified as priority places in local government plans. Their policy framework is the overarching theme. They're places that have identified and are targeted for growth. And as you also see, places that either now or in the future will have concentrations of development, both housing and employment development. Those are the two required criteria for becoming an activity center. And then as you see, two of any of the four listed below the additional requirements, intersection density, places that are walkable and have great internal mobility, high capacity transit access, either now or in the future. A mix of land use is one of the critiques of the activity centers. The prior activity centers map was it was too focused on just employment thresholds. And so we've called out specifically in the criteria the need for mixed use. And then lastly, working with one of our strategic partners on strategic development plan, housing and transportation costs, because as we all know, there is a threshold. There is an important area where that does become a major locational decision. Next slide, please. So what is the importance? Why are we undertaking a strategic development plan? It is really, as I said, to advance the goals of both Region Forward and Economy Forward to strengthen activity centers throughout the region. It's also, though, and this is most significantly, a framework to assist the work of our member local governments. Again, these are places coming from their comprehensive plans, but to offer a series, and I'll talk about them in a second, of tools and strategies that they can use to really, borrowing a phrase from the Army, cause the activity centers to become places that they can be all that they are aspiring to be. Next slide, please. How did we accomplish this? First, we have a team of COG staff, our local planning directors, and a number of consultant partners who first worked to analyze the centers. We looked at them from both a physical standpoint, their walkability, their design characteristics, urban form, if you will, as well as the real estate market characteristics of them, so a physical assessment. And then second, we're working through an assessment from an equity standpoint, the concentration of households by different income categories, the number of low-income households, and specifically the number of households within the centers that have access to jobs by transit. We're working through, and I'll talk about this in just a second, to categorize the centers in both this place typology, place groupings, and then equity groupings, places for more sort of a people needs. And then lastly, and I've alluded to this before, We have a menu of tools and strategies, opportunities, we believe, for local governments to really build on this research. Next slide, please. This is a schematic of the process I talked about. Again, for each of the centers, we're looking at it from both a place and a people or equity standpoint. We'll then identify a number of different strategies in each of those groupings and categories, and then, as I said, call out very specific tools that local governments can employ, some of which they may already be using. Our hope, our intent, is that we'll be giving a menu of things that they may wish to consider, something that will assist them in their work going forward. Next. Very quickly, and you do have this in your packet, I'm just going to walk through the current groupings very quickly, give you some illustrative examples of them. So within the place type, the urban form and market designs, downtown here in the district, this would be an example of what we are currently categorizing as what we call an urban center. Next. Reston Town Center. Based on the work of our consultants and our planning directors and the recommendations, we're categorizing that as a mixed-use, dense type of center. So, again, an illustrative example coming from all the 95. Next, please. Falls Church, a mixed-use suburban activity center, if you will. Next. West Hyattsville, close in and urbanizing, a place that is, in fact, undergoing revitalization as we speak. Next. And then Anacostia, also a revitalizing but much closer in urban center, if you will. So, again, just to give you a sense of the categories, the current groupings that we're working through with the planning directors and the steering committee. And then lastly, Satellite Cities Frederick on the periphery, one of our outer jurisdictions. Again, a category specific to their needs as they continue to evolve and transform from largely a more rural county. Okay. Next, please. I mentioned before also on a parallel track we are working with the planning directors and the consulting team to identify the people, the equity challenges, the equity categorization. Just to walk you quickly through the groupings as they currently exist, Minnesota Avenue, an area that we are categorizing as a need to stabilize and preserve it, that it's evolving, but that we want to maintain opportunities for all of the households and businesses that are currently located there. Downtown D.C., expand affordability, identifying the need for more affordable housing in strategic locations. This would be an example of one of those groupings for centers. Next, please. Bethesda, leveraging the existing assets, that it does have a good mix of uses, but being sensitive to some of the needs that are already in place. Next, please. Clarendon, catalyze investment, again, a mix of opportunities and tools that could be needed there, again, particularly around affordable housing. Next. And then Frederick County, or downtown Frederick, I should say, investing in future stability, making sure that the redevelopment that occurs there does, in fact, maintain the wonderful character, if you will, of Frederick as it exists. Lastly, wanted to call out the importance of how this can be used, utility, if you will, resources that will help the implementation. First and foremost, it is the plan itself, where I've said we've studied two-thirds of these places, and we're coming forward with a menu of tools and strategies to be employed. And we think that will really build on the good work that our local governments are already doing. Secondly, and Ron can speak in more detail about this, there's the Transportation and Land Use Connections Program, which is very focused on looking at small area projects. It's technical assistance grants, small dollar amounts, but really to help with a lot of what we were talking about with design and access and really making places better. It also is an opportunity doing what we do very well at COG. It's a peer exchange network, talking about best practices. How can you learn from other successes from around the region. Lastly, and this is something we're very excited about, we've worked very closely over the years with the Urban Land Institute, which is the association of the development community around the region. And one of the things that we have teed up working closely with their Washington District Council is the idea of technical assistance panels, where they can bring in to any one of these activity centers on request from our local government a panel of experts, be it experts in development or finance or just, you know, the whole world of real estate development to advise our local governments to really help them, get a sharper focus on how they can actually, cause their vision, if you will, for their center to become a reality. Next, please. Wrapping up then, where are we now with the project? As you can see, we're working with the planning directors, with the consultant team, the steering committee, if you will, to refine the draft plan. We've released an initial draft in May. We're meeting actually tomorrow at the Mosaic District in Fairfax. Ms. Hines will be chairing our coalition meeting tomorrow. I'd encourage any of you who might be interested in attending to come out and join us. We'll have a shuttle van running from Dunloring. But we will be going into a bit deeper dive with the coalition on the current draft of the report tomorrow. Next week, the COG board convenes an annual retreat, a leadership retreat off-site. We'll actually be doing a bit of a deeper dive with the members of the COG board next weekend at that event. And then, as you can see, wrapping up in September, it's our goal, our intent, to take the final draft of the plan to the COG board in September with plans for a much larger joint event, building on the work that you'll hear about from Ron on the priorities plan on September the 27th. I believe many of you may have already seen a Save the Date card and have seen information about that event. So with that, Madam Chair, I will stop, and I'll be glad to answer any questions anyone might have. Thank you. Not at all.
Thanks. Paul, let me just ask a couple of things because I think they'll help set the context here for our conversation. Mm-hmm. So we now have 141 activity centers that have been identified. Mm-hmm. And transit connectivity is, in fact, one of the characteristics. And so I'm hoping you can tell us how many of those centers are actually connected to transit. I was hoping for a map, but I don't know if we have a map.
I can't answer that question. I apologize. I do not have a map with me, but be happy to provide one to you. The short answer is 72% of the centers are now or will be in the future be served by high-capacity transit. Specifically, within the existing Metro Rail footprint, 80 of the current stations are within a half-mile radius of the activity centers, and then 10 of the 12 that are in the CLRP will be also within that radius.
So high-capacity transit in the context you're thinking about really means metro, not bus, or does it also include?
It's metro and it's also commuter rail.
And it's commuter rail, but it's not bus, and I think that's an important thing for us to understand as we begin to think about our work. The second question or point I want to make before I turn it over to my colleagues is that there is this housing and transportation cost piece, which is part of how something qualifies for an activity center. That's really kind of new information for all of us in the region and may, in fact, be helpful to us as we think through fair conversations that we need to have. So it's not that it's a determinant or anything like that. It's just a new lens, I think, for which to look through what we need to do in terms of fair. So while we don't have that sort of laid before mm-hmm. us either, that would be another piece of work that could come out of Region 4 that
Absolutely.
Might in fact be helpful to this board. So having made those two points, I'll open it up for questions. Mr. Giancola.
Yes, thank you for your brief. I had to kind of think a little bit about your planning area, which is of course a little more expansive than
Correct.
The Metro's planning area, particularly Frederick County, which I'm a former chief engineer of, so mm-hmm. at the county, but is there any thoughts, and I guess maybe Ron Kirby will get into this maybe a little bit, of eventually thinking about from a planning point of view getting Metro to expand out to those areas from your perspective? I mean, from the you're a community planner, is there any connection, do you think, to expand transit to those areas and discussions? And again, I said maybe Ron will get into that. But the second thing is that you talk about under additional attributes, housing and transportation costs. Can you give us a little more detail on the transportation cost element and how that's
sure.
evaluated?
Well, I'll answer the second question first. This was a statistic in working with one of our partners, Reconnecting America and the Center for Transit-Oriented Development. The threshold, if you will, is 45%. So if your combined housing and transportation costs exceed 45%, that is there's research to suggest that truly is an onerous burden for you. So that is the threshold that we've identified. We didn't. I don't have the data in front of me. We do have the data specifically for the centers of what is the estimated cost for each one of them. Do you mean the transit cost specifically versus the rent and mortgage cost, sort of breaking them into the discrete pieces? I'd be happy to provide that. I don't have that data in front of me, but as I said, the threshold is 45%. In answer to your second question, I actually had the privilege of going up to Frederick. Our board chair this year is Alderman Karen Young from the city, and actually had the opportunity to tour some of their activity centers. They're very interested, and in fact, we may actually even embark on one of the technical assistance panels with ULI for an area east of the city called East Frederick Rising. It does have the airport there, but it's sort of in transition. I was very pleased to see the MARC station that's there, and again, I will turn, as you said, to Ron. Personally, I think any sort of expansion of high capacity transit to serve them, I know there's tremendous interest in that sort of connectivity, Quarter Cities Transitway in sort of the northern parts of Montgomery County. But I'd have to defer to my colleagues specifically about the expansion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions from board members? Oh, sorry, Mr. Nichols.
You didn't miss me. I didn't raise my hand till late. It's okay. Sorry. Thanks. First, thank you for your report. I do appreciate it. And it's I think all of the efforts that are going forward right now with Region Forward, with momentum, and with our strategic plan, I think these things help to amplify the issues for the region, and that's critically important. Two things always strike me. One is that the fact that we are a region and not a single jurisdiction is a little bit crass to say, but what we have is an assemblage of data rather than a regional plan, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way. I think the reality is that we have independent jurisdictions that each craft their own development strategies that then we have an overlay of just how they all work together, and I think that's critically important for us to be able to amplify that, because a lot of the decisioning is not made to coordinate how the region works. It's made with the notion of the competitive aspects of the region, what must be done here to compete with what's going on here. And I think that that's not to say that that's bad. Mm-hmm. And I know that people are aware of the need to coordinate, but I think that just like to hear a little bit of your thoughts on how the future looks in terms of genuine jurisdictional coordination of the future activity centers so that we can begin to more effectively balance how transit and the economy works. That would be number one. Second question is, and Shaman, I've talked about this a bit, I've raised it in the past, is we have an abundance of transit infrastructure in place right now, mass transit infrastructure in place right now. And you just highlighted that 72% of the transit infrastructure, that 72% of the activity centers are in proximity to the 141 activity centers. Question I want to get more information on is how much of the development activity that we have is actually predicated upon the presence of or the planned implementation of the mass transit. And I think that that's an important factor because it begins to, we frequently talk about how much economic activity has taken place in proximity to mass transit, mm-hmm. and that's incredibly important. Mm-hmm. But the reverse of that, which I think is from the standpoint of trying to encourage more mass transit, is how much of that development is actually enabled by the mass transit, and effectively, what is the return on that investment of mass transit? If we put in $1 billion of investment, does that enable the leverage of that development. I know in communities where you, where I work and where I've done activities, in order to build development, you must demonstrate that you can meet adequate public facilities tests in terms of the amount of how you're going to move people around, how will people get there, and how will they get back. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that that's predicated upon the presence of the mass transit, I don't know that we capture the momentum of being able to say that, but for, it wouldn't happen. So, sure. Long treatise on that, but I, hopefully my question is clear, buried in all of my diatribe. Thank you.
No, thank you. I have sort of two thoughts, and I actually might defer to Ms. Hines as well. First, I think the conversations definitely are occurring. We have monthly meetings of the planning directors, the region's housing directors, folks who day in, day out really do make, you know, the decisions and are dealing with rezonings, and so forth. There's clearly the recognition that the activity centers, and this was something that was key to the work of identifying, you know, populating the map, if you will, that the planning directors recognized that this was both a technical and a policy tool. And so there was very extensive and I think very frank deliberations about, is this place, does this belong here, really sort of getting to the meat of the identification process. To your question as well, there is the clear recognition of the benefits of transit service. We do, and accessibility and proximity. One of the things that my team is working on right now is an update on one of our commercial construction reports. We have a database that actually dates back to the early 80s, where we have individual commercial projects that were started, office buildings, retail, the universe of commercial properties. And because they're individual properties, we can actually tabulate, well, how many of them were built within a half-mile radius of a metro rail station, or how many were built outside the beltway. So we can do that sort of spatial analysis. If we actually have the construction costs, the values, we could actually capture, and we have in the past done reports looking at what was the value, how much of what was constructed, not just the sheer number of projects, the size, the construction cost as well. We're updating that work right now. Report we'll be releasing sometime probably after the September 27th event, but probably the middle of this fall, looking at sort of the last 10 years of that information, what has actually occurred over the last 10 years region-wide, but then also having a lens to drill down within the footprint of the metro rail stations, also capturing over the last 10 years of development, commercial development. So more information, be very happy to share with you as it comes forward.
Well, and that's crucial, but the question, I won't say but, in addition to that, though, what I'm looking for is to take that data and determine through the planning directors or otherwise how much of it actually received its entitlement based on the presence of the mass transit. That's an important factor for us to be able to demonstrate, because I think it adds the value of the mass transit, whether you ride it or not. If 16% of that development could not occur because the transit was not there, then that adds a quantifiable value to the mass transit, mm-hmm. that you can translate into tax revenue, into jobs, into the economic aspirations of the region. And I think that's a really important piece of data, not just how much happened, but how much did the transit enable.
I do think that would be a very important question. One thing I might suggest, because I work very closely with Sean, perhaps he and I could talk and see, is there a way of sort of scoping out that work and working with his team and my staff, and maybe we could come back and report something to you at a future date.
I appreciate your report. It's very helpful and it's very important, and it's no question in my mind that the planning teams are highly sophisticated and have a good handle on what they're doing. It's just that amplifying that data, I think, from a management standpoint would really be sure. crucial. Thank you.
Anybody else before we go to Mr. Kirby? If not, okay, go ahead, Sean.
Well, I believe it's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Ron Kirby, who is Director of Transportation Planning at Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, and is also the director of the Transportation Planning Board, ATCOG. And I know that he has a presentation that he's going to be delivering to us on the recently draft released of the Regional Transportation Priorities Plan, and afterwards be entertaining questions. Ron, there's a small button there if you happen to.
I have it on, I think. Thank you very much, John, and good morning. I'm very glad to have the opportunity to present this to you this morning. I know you have this PowerPoint in your packet, and I'm not going to go through all 32 slides. I'm going to sort of talk around it and point you to a few places that I think are particularly interesting. First of all, I appreciate Sham giving the context for all of this, that I work for the TPB. The TPB is the Metropolitan Planning Organization, and our main product is the financially constrained long-range plan for the Washington region. It goes out through the year 2040. It is financially constrained, so a number of things that should be in there. Some of the components of your strategic plan are not currently. And the purpose of this priorities planning exercise was really to try to get a handle on those things, those strategies that should be in that plan and are not, that we should work on getting them into the plan. That's, you know, the real context here. And that was really the purpose of this whole exercise. And just to roll a couple of slides through there to the next one. I just want to highlight a couple of words on this slide because it says what this exercise is and most, perhaps more importantly, what it is not. This was a work program, a two-year work program approved by the TPB in June of 2011. We spent a year developing this work program. We looked at different ways of tackling this whole question of what does it mean to define regional transportation priorities. And we made some decisions about what we would do and about what we wouldn't do. And one of the key decisions was that we were going to focus on regional strategies, not projects. And that, in many ways, is akin to your strategic plan. It talks about strategies, not projects. The CLRP has 750 projects in it. We didn't want to try to prioritize those. So we said, let's get up at a higher level, look at the strategies, and then we can identify those. Those will lead to specific programs and projects. And then we say we want those that offer the greatest potential for addressing regional challenges and that the public can support. Okay. We define challenges as those things that the CLRP doesn't do very well right now, which we can measure because we do long-range forecasts of land use by small areas, including activity centers. We have the entire transportation network coded in there. We have fare structures. We have transit ridership. We have highway congestion. We have transit crowding, all of those things. And what we tried to do in this document and frame up for the general public was, here are the areas where if all we do is the CLRP and the current land use forecast, that we're not going to get where we'd like to be. And we also were looking for, as you'll see later on in this presentation, what would the public support in terms of funding specifically to do more of these things that we would like to have. And as I'll wrap up at the end, I'll give you the advance on this, is that the document we posted last night for public comment has a new section in it that we didn't have last week, which says next steps. And the next steps are very specifically focused on the update to the financially constrained long-range plan that we're scheduled to do next year. In 2014, according to the federal government, we have to do it every 4 years. We did it in 2010. It has to be done next year again. And we've made the point in this document that the timing of this exercise is such that it's a very good opportunity for us to take some of these major strategies that we think we have a lot of public support for and try to get them into the financially constrained long-range plan next year, which means we've got to have funding identified. So there's the challenge, you know, going forward. So just to, I'll just run through it very quickly, the structure of this presentation without going through it all. We have at the TPB a set of regional goals that were adopted actually some time ago. I think when Kathy was the chair of the TPB, she'll remember those. They haven't changed. They're for the ages or eternity. They're just, they do everything. So we didn't need to revisit those. But what we did do was to tick through each one of them. There were six major ones here, and identify what we thought were the major challenges to saying we've accomplished that goal relative to our baseline, which is the adopted CLRP. We assume the CLRP will be built and the land use will happen as forecast, and that assumes a number of things that are not built yet. It assumes the silver line will be completed. It assumes the purple line will be built, a number of other things. Those are the baseline as far as we're concerned. We're not debating that. We're looking at, well, if we do that, you know, how are we going to be doing overall and what should we be doing over and above that? So in each of these areas, each of these goals, the first one was providing a range of options. We identified four major challenges there: roadway congestion, transit crowding, inadequate bus service, walking and biking facilities. And let me say, as we frame these, the purpose of this exercise was to put this story in a form that we could communicate to the general public in the Washington region. And as you'll see as I get toward the end of this, what we did with all of this was we put it in a web-based survey and administered it to 660 people randomly selected throughout the region, and we chased down every part of the region until we got a representative sample, paid them $25 each to complete the survey. And it was designed so that a person who is not familiar with, any more familiar with transportation than a member of the general public, could take this survey on the web unaided and send in their results. So what we were really after were, you know, what does the general public think, the consumers and the users of this system, never mind where they live, never mind how much they know about transportation, never mind which mode they use, how do they feel about the system as a whole, and what do they think are the most important things that need to be improved? So all of this structure is written in a narrative form. It's not too technical. It's in a sort of understandable form for the general public. So our second goal is explicitly focused on activity centers, issues about not having enough development around some metro rail stations, housing and job location. The third one deals with maintenance of the existing system, preservation and safety. We highlight metro rail repair needs and also roadway and bridge repair needs. The fourth one is effectiveness, being effective in the way we operate the system. Let's assume we have it maintained. How well are we operating it, managing incidents, traffic signals, bike safety, things of that nature. The fifth one speaks to environment, environmental quality, the impact on air and water quality of vehicle use, and protection of open space. And the sixth one then speaks to interregional travel, getting freight movement into and out of the region and through the region. This deals with freight rail as well as passenger travel and particularly access to the region's airports. So that's a quick brush through the major goals and challenges. Then we laid out a set of strategies to these folks. Remember, think of yourself as picking up this in a web-based survey. We said, well, you know, there are some near-term things we can do. There are some ongoing things that we have to keep doing all the time forever. And there are some longer-term investments that we can make that will take a while to come online, but we want to have them in 10 or 15 years. We need to start now. And we gave a list of some possible strategies here. Let's improve bus stops. We have a picture of a not very good bus stop and a good bus stop. And it goes along like that, alleviating roadway bottlenecks, infrastructure for alternative fuel vehicles, charging stations, perhaps in metro rail garages, let's say, for electric vehicles. Promoting commute alternatives. A number of these things we already do, but we found in our discussions that people bring this one up all the time and say you need to do more of this, alternative commute options. Improving pedestrian infrastructure, sidewalks, traffic signals for pedestrians, so forth. Bicycle infrastructure, bike lanes, capital bike share. These were all things we hoped the public would recognize and, you know what we were talking about and give us a response. Ongoing strategies, metro maintenance and highway maintenance, bus priority, looking every way we can all the time to give buses priority lanes or traffic signal priority and so forth. Roadway efficiency, coordinated traffic signals, construction schedules and so forth. Accessible transportation for people with disabilities, metro access and other similar services. And we had one in here on updating traffic laws, which was really aimed at the fact that we're promoting more bicycle and pedestrian activity, and in many cases people don't know what the laws are, and they're not being enforced. And also they vary around the region. So we thought that would be a good one to look at. In the long term, we've done a number of scenario studies with our travel forecasting process to look at different arrays of land use and transportation investment out through the horizon year of the long-range plan, the year 2040. And we set up three different strategies here and asked people what they thought of them. One was a system of express toll lanes on the freeways and some major arterials with a very expansive bus rapid transit system. The tolls would manage the roadways so they wouldn't be congested and generate revenue to cover some of the cost. The second one was, okay, forget about the toll lanes and the bus rapid transit. Let's just focus on a land use strategy, more concentrated land use around the existing infrastructure, particularly the rail system, and additional capacity on the existing transit system to support that density, which gets to the point that was raised earlier. And that, we talk explicitly about eight-car trains and station enhancements and some of the things you have in your in momentum. And then the third one was, well, let's put those two together. And what we showed in the third strategy was, you know, the first one with the toll lanes that improves congestion, but it doesn't do much for sort of walking and biking and concentration. Second one does a lot for walking and biking, but it doesn't do much for congestion. You put the two together, you get benefits across all of these areas. We did say this third one's going to cost you a lot more, but it would do more as well. So those were the things we set up for this survey. And so what I want to do now is highlight some of the results. We spent about 3 or 4 months on this survey. As I mentioned, we wanted to get 600 people. We ended up with 660, gave them $25 to complete the survey. We did some beta testing with small groups to make sure that members of the public understood what we were asking and were responding in a way that showed they understood. We felt pretty comfortable that we had a good survey, and in the course of conducting it, we had very few people call us to say, I don't know what this is about, and tell me, help me through it. Most people seemed to be able to do it. They completed it intelligently, and they got their $25. So we feel pretty confident at this point. Now, the one thing we haven't done yet is we had open-ended questions all the way through the survey. If you've got a better idea, write it up in the box. And we haven't had time to analyze all of those comments yet. And there were a lot of them, we know that. So over the next month or two, we're going to sort through those and see if there are any major themes that pop out, something that we didn't think of that a lot of people think is important, for example. For the moment, all I've got are the numbers. And we had a piece of software called MetroQuest here, which, in addition to allowing you to array this in an attractive way to the public, allows you to ask them to rate things, and then when you get the surveys in, it automatically tabulates everything. So we have all these numbers coming out of the survey. And I think just a couple of things to highlight. The tables that I have spent the most time looking at are this table 9, which ranks the challenges in order. And we ask people, scale of 1 to 5, which do you think is the most, how important do you think this survey is? I'll get it right in a minute. How important do you think this challenge is? You know, not important, that's a 1, and not significant, somewhat significant, 2, 3, 4 is significant, and 5 is very significant. So the maximum score is 5.0, and the one that got the highest score by quite a ways was transit crowding, 4.47, followed fairly closely by metro repair needs, roadway congestion, and roadway repair needs. And if you look on the right-hand side of that table, what you will see is that these scores were pretty uniform throughout the region, whether you lived in the core or the inner jurisdictions or the outer, and they were pretty uniform no matter what mode you used to get to work, whether you drove alone or took transit or whatever, people pretty much said the same thing, which is pretty interesting. Then we moved from those challenges to the other dimension, which is, well, what would you be prepared to support in terms of doing something about these things? And this table 2, as it's labeled in here, lists these strategies. Again, with a score, we gave them the opportunity 1 to 5 to, you know, I strongly oppose this, don't do it no matter what. I sort of oppose it, I'm neutral, I support it, I strongly support it. And what we did on this table was we added this percent support to the percent strongly support. And the top one was metro maintenance at 91.4%, followed by highway maintenance, 89.6%, followed by alleviating roadway bottlenecks, 85.6%, improving access to the transit system, 81.5%, and then operations and management of the roadway system, 79.4%, and then it goes on down from there. And again, if you look to the right-hand side of this table, you'll see these percentages are fairly uniform no matter where people live, and no matter what mode they took to work. In the next table, which I think would be of particular interest perhaps here today, is that we asked these folks that if they supported these strategies, would they be willing to support additional dedicated funding for them? And it went all the way from, you know, I strongly support this, to no way would I support it. And the highest percentage by far was metro maintenance, 60%. And then you get down to highway maintenance and bottlenecks, and you're in the 40%, and then on down to some of the others. But I think the willingness there to put additional money into maintaining the metro system is pretty clear. The next one that was, and I will mention this, is kind of interesting, is that we asked some open-ended questions based on a pilot that we did with 50 people in our office. They came out of our first session wanting to talk about the confidence they had in whether money would be well spent. It's not something we asked them, but they said, we want to speak to that. So we put that in this survey and asked people, how confident are you that transportation agencies serving the region will make good use of the resources available to them? And we got 44.5% confident, 20% neutral, 35.4% not confident. And when we presented this to our board last week, people said, well, is that good? Is it not good? Is it bad? So to shed a little light on that, we looked up some other surveys. And in our report, we say, by comparison, annual Gallup surveys about general confidence in government over the 2005 to 2012 period show state governments get a 60% score, local government 70%, federal government 25%. So you can fit yourself into that group. Just to scale the thing a little bit. Public information campaigns, how important do you think those are? Very strong support, 75% there. And then we asked a question about whether infill development, getting back to Paul's area, is it going to be tough to build in around some of these centers and transit stations? Are we going to have local opposition? And a lot of people thought that was going to be an issue. So to just finish with our recommendations, in scanning through those percentages and each of those tables, the challenges and the strategies, what we've concluded at this point is a first pass, and we've got more to work on here, but that there are basically we put things in the challenge, the strategies into three categories. First one was metro and highway repair as the first priority. And that's something that we would say we need to look at for the next update of the CLRP. And as you know, the PREA legislation expires in 2020. We have a constraint in our long-range plan to reflect that. I think it's time we got rid of that constraint. So there would be our first task, it seems to me. And this, there's a concern on the highway side as well, aging roads and bridges. The second, and that's just, you know, maintaining state of good repair. Second category deals with together transit and roadway crowding and congestion, and we've grouped a number of both supply and demand strategies here. On the demand side, commute alternatives program and concentration of more growth in activity centers. And then on the supply side, near-term roadway improvements to alleviate bottlenecks, ongoing roadway management, and longer-term investments in increased capacity of the rail and bus network, including explicitly 8-car trains, station enhancements, and bus rapid transit on express toll lines. The third category, we put everything else together. What we would say about all these other strategies, the mobility needs of people with disabilities, bus priority and traffic laws, encouraging alternative fuel vehicles and expanding bicycle infrastructure, they all got over 60% support. So there was no break where something dropped into the 20 or 30, but they were not in the 90% range where the highest groups were. So we need to keep addressing those, but they don't come to the top of the priority list. Then we did say something about the response to the polling questions, more transparency to inspire confidence, maximum use of public information campaigns, and trying to get everybody involved when we're trying to put high-density development around transit stations. So we just posted the draft report last night. We have a public comment period for a month. Our board has asked that they be given the opportunity to take the survey and that we report on what they think. Our citizen committee has also asked for that. So we're going to do that exercise in the next month or so. We'll have more information in a month on the results of that, as well as comment from the general public. And we're going to come back in September with a revised version and carry on the conversation from there.
Thank you, Mr. Kirby. Mr. Giancola, Mr. Downey, Mr. Bolger, Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you very much, Ron. Really an interesting survey. Wow, it's some good food for thought here. Back on page 38, you talk about challenges to achieving goal two. You talk about housing and job location. And I'm kind of interested to know what kind of survey information you had to make the statement that most housing, especially affordable housing, I'm keying on the word affordable housing, is located outside the area, activity areas. Did you actually have a survey which showed where all the, well, first of all, defining affordable housing, and then did you have a survey that showed where all this affordable housing was?
Yeah. Well, this is pretty much based on Paul's work.
He's now we're back to Paul again. Okay.
Right. I got this from him. He's defined the activity centers. If you saw the map that Mary was asking for, they're small little dots. They don't cover a lot of geography. There's a whole big chunk of this region outside of those activity centers where a lot of people live and work and so forth. And, you know, one of our interests is to get, in fact, one of our scenarios was to get more housing in closer around those stations. There's a lot of opportunity for that. It's not always easy to do, but that would help. In fact, one of our scenarios, we assumed that we could bring housing in from outside the region and locate it around those stations so we wouldn't have these long commutes coming in from far out. Key to that is to make the housing affordable, and that is an ongoing challenge with these activity centers, and there's always the gentrification pressures that we have to deal with.
So, Paul, how do you define affordable housing, and do you have that kind of detail?
I'm not a housing expert, but what our housing programs team defines is sort of 80 to 100% of area median income. There's extremely lower thresholds than that, but that if it was affordable to a person who, say, earned, you know, 80 to 100% of the average income of a household around the region.
Was that broken up by the region or by jurisdiction?
That's actually broken up. That is a regional average, right. But then we look at it on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis.
So area median income, just the rough measure, is about 100,000.
Right.
It's up to 107. It was 100
right.
last year. So you can do the delta pretty easily, and that's for a family of four.
Four. Correct.
So it changes if you're a household of two or a household of one, it would be lower. So, but that is still quite a bit of money for people to make
right.
to be able to live comfortably at all in the region. Mr. Downey?
Thank you, Ron. I'm struck by the difference between the strategies and the public opinion and what at least now is in the constrained plan. And I did want one clarification. When you say, Shyam, none of Momentum or Metro 2025 is reflected, do you mean nothing and to even maintenance of the existing system, or do you mean the new projects?
The new projects.
The new projects. Okay. Okay. None of the new projects are reflected, but at least there's something there for maintaining the existing system.
Well,
yeah.
We have assumed RIA program remains in place until 2020, but after that.
After the, right, so that's my point.
Right.
Looking out to the future to 2025, nothing for new projects, nothing for maintenance of the existing system.
Right.
Clearly at odds with the strategies that are identified and the public opinion that's identified. So fortunately, that's the old plan. Coming up is the new plan. I think we all have to speak to this issue in the new plan. Just from the federal perspective, I know the feds do not approve the CLRP, but they certainly have thoughts about it, and one of their thoughts and explicit policies is state of good repair for your existing system is a given. So,
Mr. Bolger?
Of course, Mr. Downey has articulated my interest in. I, let me rephrase what Mort was talking about. Maybe you can. How do we get to this point where we don't have anything in the CLRP? Who's responsible for that?
We all are.
Oh, great.
Funding for adequate maintenance.
Yeah, I know that's fake.
Bull. We can't punish it. And we thought, well, you know, that was set for a year or two, and we'll get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, year after year after year went by, we did get the free program. What happened was we moved a year out when it happened. It because of the free program. But it's still there at around 2030 or something like that. So it is a gaping shortcoming in the long range plan.
I have a further question. Can you tell me how much flexible federal highway dollars and CMAQ dollars we have not flexed to transit over the last 10 years?
Yeah.
We had one in 2010 for 100 buses out of CMAQ. Okay? I don't see any indication in the CLRP that we flexed STP funds to transit or that service transportation program funds out of federal highway. Or since 2010, any CMAQ funds, which could have been a possibility beyond PREA to fill this huge gap that we've got.
Right.
Can you answer that?
No, except it's fairly small, as you know. What I will say is one of the phraseology in this report that we actually put in and took out and put back in again was is the funding in the CLIP, which is all committed, all the CMAQ money is committed to projects.
Why?
Well, the question, because a lot of people, you know, want to see those projects. Now, well, let me finish my point, though. What we have said is, you know, here are some additional things that need to be done. Mostly, you're going to need new money to get those, and that's where we need to look. However, the CLIP is not written in stone, and it is possible to go back in there and say, there are some things that are not here that are more important than some of the things that are here.
Yeah.
So let's take some of this money and move it. Now, that, of course, is not going to sit well with the people who are counting on the projects that are in there. And so it's going to be more difficult. But it's certainly a possibility.
Mrs. Hutchins and then Mrs. Porter.
Well, I wanted to comment on two aspects of it because I think Alvin's statement is a larger part of all of this definition, I think. And so one of the challenges is what is it that we are actually referencing when we set our priorities and we list congestion and transit in comparative lines as to the overall benefit that the region will become get from this. And looking at the CLRP, and I can looking at what we just approved this last week, and looking at, I'd say, one section of projects which have very much a focus of congestion relief. And I think it goes to Mr. Bulger's question, whether or not there's the opportunity for folks to look and see how to leverage more of those dollars in terms of the mitigation that helps transit and transit use, and most importantly, the economic development part that brings that's value from the transit. The economic development that comes from relieving congestion on roads is not in the same category of what we talk about when we talk on Mr. Jourdain's side. So I think that's where I think the conflict is for the region, equally for the housing balance piece. You cannot develop a good, robust TOD area without driving the affordable housing piece to give the balance of jobs that need to be there. Mm-hmm. And so what do we have? We have a conflict then between driving, because that's where the affordable housing is, mm-hmm. and transit. And I think the challenge is for localities to make the hard decisions to make the hard investments in transit. We can get to metro systems, but it's really hard for us to get to the ancillary bus supporting systems to take people from home to jobs and connecting that. While the half mile is really the good measure for the long-term economic development, I can tell you very few jurisdictions are affording the ability to put affordable housing within a half a mile of a transit system. And once you do that, you know, once you're missing that, you're going to constantly have the desire in surveys and communities to drive the road side of this. And I think it is the biggest challenge this region is going to have in delivering the message that that is what that place is about. It's about jobs and housing and all of what supports that for the rest of the economy. So I think there's almost a schizophrenic aspect about what we try and do here.
Well, if I could make one comment there. One of the things we emphasized in the second priority was that you need an integrated approach. You need transit, you need highway, you need land use, you need bike, and you need ped. And all of these things have to be there and working together to be successful. It's not a zero-sum game of more for transit and less for highways. And a number I want to point your attention to, and this is not really statistically significant, but it's food for thought. On table 9, where we rank the challenges, if you look at the transit crowding and roadway congestion, the people who drive alone to work rank transit crowding as the worst problem. The people who take transit to work rank roadway congestion as the worst problem. And I think there's a sense in there that, you know, if the transit system's not doing too well, my roads are going to be more congested. And if the roads are congested, there's going to be more people jammed on my transit car. So maybe we better get them both fixed. But
Mrs. Porter and then Mr. Downs.
There has been some discussion on the board before about momentum and the kinds of things that we're trying to do and why some of these projects aren't in the constrained long-range plan. And I think, and I just want to emphasize a couple of things that Ron has said. The first is that the main criterion that gets things in or keeps them out is funding. If it's funded, it's in there. If it's not, it's not. That's pretty simple. And then the second thing, when I was on the Transportation Planning Board, people were always asking us to allocate money to things. The Transportation Planning Board does not allocate money to things. Basically, money comes identified with the project. And generally, it's the sponsor of the project who has to come up with the money to meet the financial constraint. So the way we get things in the CLRP, if we want to get the momentum projects in the CLRP, we're going to have to simply identify funding for We have to identify funding for them, and that is the way to get them in there. And there are many bigger issues here, and the funding is certainly not uncomplicated, but it sort of is the key thing. And the CLRP to some extent is sort of a mechanical thing. I don't want to make it sound like it's less important than it is. It's clearly important, but it's essentially a criteria, mechanical criteria. You get the funding, you're there. If you don't, you don't.
Mr. Downs.
Long ago and far away in another land, I also served as chair of the TPB. Maybe before Ron got there. The long-range plan is constrained by funding by federal law. The decisions about what goes into that plan are just not bringing what comes to the table funded. The MPO is charged to make allocation decisions based on a rational, comprehensive regional plan. If a project falls outside of that, the TPB can decide collectively to not fund it or to not add it to the list, whether it is funded or not. We have decided, as a matter of a peace treaty between Maryland, Virginia, and the district, that everybody brings their own project and we all log roll each other's projects. That's simply the nature of the beast. We're the most complicated region, I think, in the United States and maybe in the world, having the Congress, the District, Maryland, and Virginia as party to our planning process. Recognizing the fragmented nature of the decision-making process helps explain how we got this way and how we're going to continue to live this way. I wanted to make a separate point, though, and follow up on something that Catherine said. I know it's politically incorrect to raise issues straight up like social justice and social equity, either in the general planning process or in the transportation planning process. I think everybody perhaps got tired of talking about the poor by saying, well, they're always going to be with us. And this process does not specifically mention, although it mentions housing allocation and job maldistribution, et cetera. While the average family income for the region may be 100,000, there are entire pockets of this region that have family incomes of under $20,000 a year for a family of four. They are anchored in their location by a whole variety of factors, not the least of which is economics and to some degree still lingering discrimination about housing. The only remedy for that is a robust, comprehensive plan for getting people to jobs. The only way to do that, because a number of these families cannot even afford a car, let alone be able to drive it to work on a regular basis, is transit, reverse commute, a conscious strategy about economic access for the 25% of households that are getting killed by the economy and the lack of a recovery for those households has to be part of the going forward agenda. If not in this planning process, at least in the WMATA planning process, perhaps that's solely ours, but it would be nice if there was a stronger recognition of this interrelationship about income disparity and a growing gap, and the threat that is to the economic vitality, ultimately, of the entire region. Regions that are successful and growing utilize all of the resources that they possibly can within the region. I think we need to say that in a stronger fashion than we do, and we need to build that as a planning objective going forward. Part of this authority's responsibility, I think, is to get everybody that we can to meaningful employment of some kind within this region. And we'll all be stronger for it if we can. And that's not about the split between highways and transit. It's about how we allocate all of our resources against a plan that has an objective about having that 25% of our population actually have the same economic opportunities as the rest of us.
Mr. Costa, Mr. Nichols.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to kind of turn this back to the conversation about what we do next. And I think one of the items that we're going to be faced with soon is the renewal of Metro Matters and kind of the successor to that. So this gives us a lot of support for kind of a regional solution for keeping the money in place for a good state of repair, but also consideration of some of these projects that we've listed in the 2025 horizon to fund those things. And I think we need to kind of think about how to use this plan that TPB is putting forward, as well as kind of how we're going to make the case for the jurisdictions as well as the federal government to support ongoing improvements as well as or ongoing maintenance as well as these important capacity improvements. So I would ask staff to kind of think through that as they're thinking through this campaign, next campaign to renew Metro Matters or whatever that's going to be called in the next generation as we go through this. But I think this gives us a lot of important background information, but also indications of support publicly to do so from a regional perspective. And I think that's the key thing that comes out of this. Also, I noted that there's a public comment period. I think we should get on record as a board in terms of how to connect momentum to this. I think this is an opportunity to make that connection since we've done all this work, and to start the discussion in terms of how do we translate this into action, not necessarily planning planning things, but ultimately into projects, which I think is what matters, and funding for those projects, as Ms. Porter so noted. So those, I think we need to think about how to move this forward and make that connection.
That's a great idea, and we perhaps, Sean, you and I could talk about how to structure a comment that would, in fact, achieve that for the board. We can bring it back in September. Mr. Nichols.
Thank you, and thank you for that report. That the survey really sharpens a lot of issues. A couple of different thoughts on two different directions. One is, I think the one was a question. I know that you worked very hard to get the geographic stratification of the survey, and I wonder if there were any additional. Every survey can't be all things to all people, but to what extent did you have economic stratification built into the survey to be factored into it, and perhaps other elements of being able to more narrowly or more succinctly define your survey populace? That would be one piece. The second one is really an observation around the survey. And it's important that we capture how individuals feel and what their feelings are with respect to to all of the factors that you surveyed. I think that we also need to similarly gather how businesses feel, because what we have is people going to places to support success of businesses. We have transit-dependent populations, or businesses that are transit dependent on getting their workforce back and forth. And I think that it's very important that we clearly gather their feelings in terms of that kind of data. We certainly have the advocacy of many, many business organizations around transit policy and effective use of those resources. That's important. I think it would also be important to amplify through the same channels of intelligence, exactly how the people who write the paychecks to pay the salaries, who pay the utility bills, who run businesses and are dependent upon effective mass transit for their employees to be able to work. That's the second piece of it. The third piece really is an additional aspect of the point raised by Tom. And in terms of the equity issue, I think there's a social justice issue that I think that there is an obligation to discuss, but I also see it as an economic imperative. And there's an additional piece of data that I believe is very important to amplify. We talk about median household incomes and we talk about who lives where, but I think the evidence is there that more and more people are living further and further away from the activity centers because they simply can't afford to live there. But that's where the jobs are emerging. So they have to get there in order to work. They can't afford to live there, but the jobs that they occupy there can't afford to pay them more than they're already getting right now. So we really, in effect, have a tax, a disproportionate burden that people who can't afford to live where the activity centers are, the cost of being far away is enormous in terms of the time it takes you to get to work.
Alvin, can you wrap it up?
Yep, I will in just a moment, but I want to make a very important point. It's very clear to me, okay? It is important that we understand what it costs the individual to get to that work. Not because they choose to drive, but because they simply can't afford to live close by. And that's a percentage of, that's a significant cost that if you are in that economic class, you can't afford. And it's important to businesses because if we can't get the people to the jobs, then that is ultimately going to cause our economy to collapse. And we speak in terms of affordable housing as 15% of the housing built has to be affordable or all those kinds of things. That won't nearly touch the issue of creating a robust economy so that people can get to work who are working every day but simply can't afford to live where the jobs are. And I think that has to be sharpened as a focus of our economic strategy, of our transit strategy, and our regional strategy.
Can I make a brief response?
Like Paul to chime in, because actually this is a point that the coalition is very focused on, too. So go ahead, Ron. And then.
Okay, just to take your 3 points, I think they're very good. As far as the representativeness of the survey sample, we have tables in the report that compare our sample with 2010 census data with regard to jurisdictional residents, housing unit type, income, gender, age, ethnicity and race, and usual commuting mode. And they match pretty well. Actually, the worst departure is the percentage of usual commuters by public transportation is disproportionately high in our sample. So, but apart from that, we did very well. And I think you'll be impressed. We worked very hard to get that. With regard to the businesses, I just attended a meeting yesterday with the business community on transportation priority. I think these priorities are framed in a sufficiently broad manner and have got sufficiently broad public support behind them that the business community will support them and won't get caught up in the sort of, you know, jurisdictional modal parochialism that often bedevils, you know, our attempts to get support. That would be my comment there. With regard to equity, part of what we do with the CLRP is a lot of analysis of the data we have on how the system performs, congestion, crowding. One of the things we look at is access to jobs from various parts of the region by highway and transit, and it gets to that equity issue we have. And that's one of the things that the federal government requires us to do, actually. There's an environmental justice requirement. There's lots of requirements in our planning process that require us to do lots of different tabulations, and many of the issues that have been raised here, we do have some quantification of those in our plan document that I think would be very useful.
And Paul, if you just want to talk briefly about the coalition.
Thank you. Two very quick points. A year ago, we released through the Region 4 Coalition, we actually talked about Region 4, and we have the 28 goals and targets and whatnot. To your point about sort of the spatial decisions and are we putting growth where, you know, we think it's going to be, we have targets of 50% of all the housing and 75% of all the commercial construction should be in the activity centers. We're not coming close to those targets. We're hitting, bumping around sort of the 30-40% level for both. So we're well below what we have targeted. To your larger question, the equity assessment, that really is, you know, something that's critical. It's that sort of second typology that I referred to. We're looking at what is the distribution of affordable housing in the activity centers. As you said, it clearly is a challenge with redevelopment and it impacts small businesses as well. That's something else we haven't quite stirred into the conversation, but would like to. And then, again, the distribution of households by income. And finally, to the larger point, is what is the accessibility of jobs by transit within a 45-minute transit or commute time, rather, for those low-income households within the center. So those are sort of the data points, the metrics, the targets that we're working through right now that I think will at least begin to address some of your concerns. But personally, I agree with you wholeheartedly that it is very definitely a challenge.
I'm going to go to Jim, and then I think we probably need to wrap it up because we do have other work that we have to do this morning. Before I turn to Jim, who I know will do a marvelous job of summing up, let me say that part of the purpose of today was to give you information to think about, and that we clearly, as an agency, we were going to have to do a plan ourselves. And so as you reflect on what you've heard today and the conversations we've had, I would challenge each of us to think about what underlying questions do you have relative to our work and what's been presented here, so that we can share that with staff and that can help to frame up the conversation that we're going to need to have as we put our regional plan together. So there's plenty of stuff on the COG website, as both Paul and Ron have indicated. So if you need to go in and dig a little more, think. But really, I challenge you all on these questions of framing. Let's get that conversation going during the month of August so staff can do a good job for us of getting the right data sets before us. So, Jim, do your magic.
I don't know about magic. It's going to be very, very brief. And that is one of the things that came out of this is that we have a lot of work to do on momentum moving it forward. And we're going to be having some discussions as a board about how we spend our time going forward. And I think it's very important to keep in mind that we need to stay focused on tying our activity at the committee level and at the board level on how do we implement momentum to get these things done. So hopefully folks will walk away with that takeaway from this session, is that we need to kind of change our process in order to accomplish this goal. And we'll elaborate on that a little later.
Okay, thank you all. Thank you both for coming, Sean. Thank you for all the work you did to set this up. And our committee is adjourned.